Welcome back to another episode of the Monochrome Podcast. This is episode number 36. Super excited for you guys to be here. I want to just go ahead and introduce my co-host, Keith.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going well, man. Excited to do this with you.
Yeah.
We have an incredible interview coming here in just a couple of minutes that you will want to stick around for. Jason Stafford, Movie Logistics Masterclass. I'll talk a little bit more about this, but he blew me away when we did this interview. I had no clue what his role was on films and didn't realize how impactful it is to kind of make this process so much easier and smoother. And I think there's a lot that as the church we can learn about how we can break down our projects and do a whole lot better routine and all that. So be looking out for that here in just a couple minutes. But if you're just now joining, welcome. Welcome to the Monochrome Podcast. This is really a place for productions and creatives to come together, all of us who serve in the church behind the scenes, everybody from communications to worship leading, production, technology, social media. This is your tribe, and we're glad you guys have heard. We're not here with the answers, but we want to come with the right questions. The hope is we'd spark something, trigger something, or create conversation for you guys and your ministries to get a little bit better, to help reach people in our community for the gospel. And so we're so glad you're here. If you have enjoyed this and you haven't done this yet, would you hit subscribe? Would you give us a 5-star rating? And we're asking one other quick thing. Would you fill out the podcast feedback form? There's a link in our show notes for that. And a couple of people will win a salt swag bag. So we'll hook you up with a little bit of merch of some sorts, or resources, books, etc. But we want to hook you up with some stuff if you'll give us a little bit of insight on how to continue to serve you well. So, Keith, let's jump in, man. What is in your cart?
Well, I feel like every time it comes to my cart, the people, y'all know what to expect. It's going to be something that deals with filmmaking.
Which is fitting for this episode. So
absolutely. Jason Stafford, by the way, if you listen to that interview, you are going to find something that you don't think about that you should be thinking about in the production of your content. So just check that out. But in my cart this time, I've got the Smoke Genie. It's not new. It's a little, you know, it's old by modern day standards. It's 2 years old, but they keep updating it. They've even got a more compact one called the Smoke Ninja. If this isn't small enough, which it is pretty much the size of, like, if you stacked, it's about 1.5 iPhones, if that metric makes sense to your brain. But here's why I like this thing, okay? In a small, compact body, you have the ability in 10 to 15 minutes to have completely filled your room. Now, I'm not talking about the main auditorium here. We're talking about uses would be great for a set. It'd be great for something like a children's room, a kid's room, some other like smaller room that you may have that you do events in your church.
Art installation.
Anything like that. Exactly. Because it's very mobile. So that is one of the great things about it. You don't have to have it plugged in like a normal fogger. You can, it's even got a magnetic kind of a piece to it to where you can connect it to anywhere. You can kind of hang it, just hang like a C-stand or something and, you know, connect it to it and it's good to go. The battery life on it, it isn't great, but it doesn't take a lot of fog to go a long ways. And what's even cooler about this, what I really, really like, is that you can actually buy like 2, 3, or 4 of them. You can put them in different places and you actually have a remote where you can control like the settings of each one of them.
So it's like a stereo.
One up, you can turn one off. You're saying, I got too much fog. You don't have to go and manage the machine. You can be back at front of house and you can push a button and the fog turns off. So
or behind the camera or whatnot.
Exactly. So for me, I think
something
there's
on
a lot
fire
of
on film or.
Exactly. There's when it comes to filmmaking, the ability to use this thing, the creative ways that you can implement it are endless.
Let's also just say filming, this, Keith. This could totally be a prank object, right? Like you get this.
Oh, absolutely.
You set it in like your boss's desk and you like remotely ignite it so like smoke is coming out of their desk. I mean,
yeah. Put a little orange LED light, you know, in their chair, right? Turn that sucker on full power and then let the Smoke Genie go. It will definitely cause a reaction. So, if for no other reason, that's a great reason to purchase this thing. But yeah.
You know what this thing costs?
Yeah, I think it's on the price here, and I think I should know that right off the top of my head. I believe that it is $600. It comes with a kit. But if you're on more of a budget, the Smoke Ninja, which is a smaller compact one, instead of 1.5 iPhones, just about an iPhone in size, it, I think, costs somewhere in the range of like $200. So,
because you got to be like a pro pranker if you're going to go down the prank route.
You could, yeah. But I mean, if you're a YouTuber, if you make reels, TikTok, it's an investment in your content. So, but anyway, youth pastors would love this thing. There's so many ways that you could get in trouble with it.
I love it. I love it.
We have some amazing partners who have helped make this podcast happen this year. And our friends at Amplio Systems are not just there to install gear, but they are also church leaders who've been in the trenches. They know the pressures of Sunday, they know what you're going through, and they believe your AV system should support your ministry and not distract from it. We love Amplio because they walk with churches from start to finish. They design amazing, like future-proof, volunteer-friendly systems that help people encounter Jesus and, again, not distract from it, which we know can sometimes be a problem with the AV systems. But you can meet Amplio, you can talk to them, hear more about how they could help your church specifically. You can meet them at the Worship Classic on October 7th, which is the day before SALT. So come to Nashville, go golfing with Amplio at the Worship Classic, and then come to SALT together. It is free, which is an extra bonus, and they would love to hear your story. But if you want to check out more info, learn more about the Worship Classic or what Amplio does, just click the link in the show notes.
Man, I am so excited for what Amplio is doing, Keith. I know I get a lot of pushback in the office that oftentimes I dress like I play golf, but I don't live, act, or play like I play golf. So hopefully those who are a little bit of imposters like me are also welcome and invited to be a part of that. But that's going to be a lot of fun. So hopefully you guys sign up, go to the Worship Classic and be a part of that. So, all right. I got a little news update. This came across my radar. Want to get your talk, because this kind of also plays into a little bit of like the filmmaking side. But listen, there's a lot of talk, Keith, about streaming wars, right? And I know, hold on, someone's listening to this like, why is SALT talking about streaming wars, right? The Monochrome Podcast doesn't need to be talking about this, but hang on for just a second. So everybody's really been talking about how like Netflix kind of rules the roost here when it comes to subscribers. And you've heard all the news that like Disney and Amazon, Peacock, Paramount, NBC Universal, you know, they've all been trying to get the subscriber base like a Netflix does, right? Because they got a lot of power. Mm-hmm. And I even think as churches, I've heard people explore like, how could we get our short film series or our Bible study series, or can we get into filmmaking or whatever, right? Austin Stone Story Film Group, could they get into some of these streaming networks? And I mean, that's a whole thing, right? But Nielsen just came out, you know, that's the company that like rates TV viewership and stuff like that, but they now rate viewership across all these streaming platforms and kind of viewership at large. And for the third month in a row, Netflix is not the top viewer. In fact, YouTube has outperformed all of these, right? So they've topped Netflix, they've topped Disney, they've topped all these. I mean, here's some really interesting quick stats, but 12.5% approximately, according to Nielsen, of all online viewership is now on YouTube. And that is factoring all streaming, all television, all everything. That's crazy. Compare that to second place Disney, and even that's at 10%. And 7% of Netflix, this is again, note, time watched. This is crazy to me, right? I mean, think about this.
Are you saying Disney's outperforming Netflix too?
Disney is outperforming Netflix right now. Now, you have to factor in that also probably factors in their ESPN, their ABC. So they've got a lot more television power to get viewership. But yeah, I mean,
I was going to say, it's like double news. Yeah. That is interesting, because I remember like years ago, I was making YouTube videos. Don't look for them. They're terrible. But they do exist, and I remember making them and looking around all the other people making content on YouTube, and I was like, I think this is over. It was like 2020, and I was just like, I missed the YouTube rush. No, you know, there's no more, you know, concentration on this. Everything's going to much shorter form TikTok kind of content now. And so I just thought, you know, whatever. Hearing this news has got to be a real boost to people who have kind of stuck with the game. They keep putting their content out there on YouTube for people to find. I know that my last church that I previously was at, that they religiously have posted on YouTube every single week for years and years. They have not let go one bit. So like, this is great news for people like that, that, hey, there's still quite an audience out there. The algorithm of YouTube is something to really like study and to invest in, because that is where the largest group really is. And I'll just say, as a dad, I can't get my kids to watch Netflix, Disney Plus,
bring up kids. Yeah.
Anything. I try. I'm like, check out this show, you know, like get them into like the Magic School Bus or something like really cool and classic. And they just want to watch somebody play Minecraft. That's what they want to do. So,
well, I think you're onto something. And I think the reason this is encouraging for Big C Church is, I think if you've been asking yourself the question of like, man, how do we get our sermon series or our teaching or our Bible study stuff on all these other platforms, thinking that's where the subscribers are, that may be where the subscribers are. But Nielsen is now proving that the viewership is on YouTube. So what an opportunity, right? Why not be going into your leadership and saying, hey, how do we have a YouTube strategy if we don't already? And I think that there's great opportunity for us to essentially meet the world where they're already watching the most things. And let's get into kind of their ecosystem and hopefully bring a little bit of light into maybe a dark world. So
yeah, I love super. It. And that's cool news.
Yeah, super encouraging. So,
all right. Well, I'd like to take a minute just to talk a little bit about SALT Conference, my favorite topic to discuss on this podcast. Yep, SALT 2025. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, salt2025.com is where you can find those. I want to tell you about a workshop. We just got done talking about YouTube and the amazing outreach opportunity that you have with the eyeballs that have been focused there. And we have a workshop being led by Brady Sticker, who is the CEO, founder of the church marketing company, Church Candy. Great name. He is going to be teaching a workshop on his meta ad framework that they've utilized to increase the attendance of many churches. And pretty much what he says is that a lot of marketing dollars are wasted on reaching people that aren't even in your community. How can you create a funnel that could actually show you real results, where the people that you, you know, live with in your community are the people that actually see your content? And really what this is all about, this isn't about just building numbers. Ultimately, the focus is there are people out there that need to be exposed to the gospel. They need to be exposed to your church and what they're doing. And we all want to be better about how we can do that. And so I want to encourage you, not just this workshop, but there are so many. This is one of the great things that you can only get if you come to conference, is just your choice of all these amazing speakers and talented people that serve the church all over the country. And so if you want to get those tickets, salt2025.com, buy them, not just for yourself, go ahead and bring some of your team members as well. And we cannot wait to see you there.
That's right. October 8th through 10th, 2025 here in Nashville, Tennessee. And if you want, you can use the discount code MONOCHROME for $20 off a ticket. I about gave you way more money off that ticket, but $20 off a ticket. Use the code MONOCHROME, salt2025.com. Speaking of viewership, speaking of watching things online and stuff like that, we are going to transition into an incredible conversation with Jason Stafford. We've both talked about this already on this episode, but he is about to blow your mind. And the role that he has on a film set is so vital. And so what I want to encourage you as you kind of step into this and you listen to this, I want you to listen to it in the vein of, what could you do in your creative process? What could you do in your filmmaking process? What could you do in your church to take what he does for a film, which is a very linear process, and he breaks it up to make it the most efficient, right? One of the things that kind of came out with Jason in a pre or post recording, I think when we were doing this interview, is every film, no matter if you're Wicked or you're like the most indie startup film, you are on a budget, right? Even Wicked had to watch in their hundreds of millions of dollar budget and their sets that they're building. Mm-hmm. They had to make cuts somewhere. And so he was kind of like, the script process that he manages really helps create efficiency. So without further ado, here's Jason Stafford. Jason, what an honor to have this conversation. You and I were talking a little bit before we hit record, and this is going to be a good one. I mean, the role that you play, I want to let you have a little bit of a snapshot of kind of the role you play on films most recently. Obviously, the conversation we were talking about was I Can Only Imagine a couple years back, yep. But you've sat in a couple roles. Give kind of a quick snapshot of the role you're playing in a lot of the films you're a part of.
Yeah, I primarily work in faith-based films. It's really my heart, and in the role of the first assistant director. And essentially what that is the organization scheduling component to a project. So responsible for breaking down the script and laying it out in a way that's most effective for time and money, as well as just organizing the cast schedule and collaborating with the different departments so that everybody's on the same page for what's happening that day.
I love it. And even just in the quick few minutes we had to chat before we hit start, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it reminds me how big teams are that work on films, whether they're blockbuster hits or faith-based, they still are large teams. There are, you know, a lot of moving parts. I want to kind of go back as someone who primarily has been in faith-based films and as someone who is, you know, probably a lover of sort of this craft of filmmaking. I just want to say this. When I watched I Can Only Imagine, I remember Jason saying, okay, this is the best faith-based film I've ever seen at the time. And I think they've continued to getting better. What do you think the decade that kind of preceded I Can Only Imagine, what do you think allowed storytelling, specifically faith-based films, to evolve so much? I mean, I don't want to call anybody out, but you probably know what I'm talking about. Like, there are early films that just were like cringy, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of it is just as filmmakers and storytellers, we're learning as we go, learning what's important, to the storytelling to capture an audience. It's also understanding who our audience is, that it's not always just people of faith, but there's, you know, it's the gamut. And some films in the faith-based, arena are really geared to a church audience, to fellow believers, to encourage and lift up and build up and provide entertainment. And some have a little bit more of a purpose to sort of plant seeds and help people in their journey to find Christ, or if they found him just to, or if they've met him, but are just needing those seeds to grow. That's kind of what it's there for. But I would say this, you know, when you, a lot of it's innovation too. You know, you think about a Ford F-150 truck versus a Model T. I mean, they're both put out by Ford, but one was, you know, amazing at its time as a pioneer vehicle. And now you've got something that, you know, can drive itself and all these things. So part of it's just the natural progression of doing what we do and learning how to do it better.
It sounds like you're almost alluding more to some of the technology and the equipment you can get your hands on, not necessarily just the craft itself. Or are you talking about all of it?
I think it's all of it. I think one isn't good without the other. I think if you have all this innovation and technology, but you don't know how to use it, it's no good. And if you've got all the passion and desire, but don't know how to tell a story, don't know the tools that are there to best utilize, sometimes you can fall short. So I think it's all the components working together and the collaborative effort of the diversified fields of creativity of pulling the right minds and hearts together to make it happen. So it takes a team.
I want to ask a question maybe on behalf of filmmakers that are listening to this or watching this, right? We serve a community of people who work in and kind of around the church, and many of them may be filmmakers either by hobby or by trade. One of your jobs is to, it sounds like, take the script, break it up, figure out how do we become most efficient from a budget standpoint. Obviously, everybody that's hearing my voice right now is probably has to deal with budgets. I am just encouraged that no matter how big the project is, there's still a budget. There's still something that's going to kind of create some boundaries. How do you think about that process, Jason? How do you think about breaking the script down? Are there secrets? Are there tricks? Are there?
There are tools but a lot of it is just repetition. It's just doing it. You know, the things that I didn't notice in script when I first started that I can pull out and understand now and almost become second nature, little things from, you know, a prop that, in one scene, an actor leaves with it. There might be a couple scenes that go by, but then they reappear again and they need to have that prop in their hand because it wouldn't make sense if it all of a sudden just disappeared. You know, just little things like that. I think is part of
continuity
that
under your sort of jurisdiction as well, or is that usually a different team?
No, it's usually a different team. And like on the day of filming, there is a continuity person, a script supervisor that is their sole focus is really working as an editor's assistant, both that they have the right things in hand, but also, you know, when you talk about multiple takes and taking pieces of each take, you need that person to know, well, when was I holding that glass in my left hand?
Yeah.
When did I set it down? So it doesn't just keep appearing in the cut in odd places. So that's part of that.
Now, will you take the script and actually cut it up or put it in some sort of digital form that kind of says, okay, here's all the scenes we're going to do on this day or these series of days because this set matches all this?
Yeah, I don't take the script and cut it up, but I take out or basically I break down each scene. There's a software called Movie Magic Scheduling that you can basically build your schedule in that software using the scene numbers and the setting, and then you pull out the actors that are in that scene, or the characters that are in that scene, the props, the wardrobe, the you know, if there's vehicles, or what time of day is it, day, night, is it interior, exterior, all those components sort of go together. And then once you have it all entered into the software, you can start to manipulate and move those things around to where all of the settings that are in the living room of your main character's house, you can sort of compile those together so that you're not, you never shoot a script in order for the most part. I'll never say never. There have been some that will do that, but for efficiency, you're shooting all those scenes that take place in that living room. So you're setting it up once, lighting it, shooting it, and then you can tear it down and move on and go
elsewhere. Even if the characters are changing costumes, you're changing props, you're changing time of day, all that sort of stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it could be a period of time that passes. And so there might be some physical characteristics that you need to do with the characters to show that change in time. And because of that, then sometimes you can't shoot it, or you might have to have two sections where you'll do one section and location, but you have to return to that location. That can also be for certain actors. You might have a primary character that, you know, you may have for 3 days of your 30 days of filming. So you sort of consolidate their scenes. And sometimes it means returning to a location to shoot out the scenes with them. So
what I feel like you're saying is if the actor is more expensive than the location, maybe it makes sense to go back to that location.
Sometimes that's the case. And that's exactly it. That's why you're managing both time as a resource and money as a resource, because in a perfect world, you would do it just for the efficiency of movement. But sometimes there's things that outweigh the importance of that.
There's so many questions I want to ask. I want to ask just big picture. You obviously get a chance to see kind of the whole process through, or at least have been around it enough to see that whole process. If you were to kind of break it up into percentages, Jason, how much of a feature film that we watch in a movie theater, how much percentage of that is like what I'd call pre-planning, like before the camera ever hits shoot or an actor ever starts saying a line in front of a camera? How much of that work, what's that percentage? What's the actual shooting percentage? And then like, what is it after you're shot? You know, after the whole film is shot, how much percentage wise still has to go in post-production, editing, marketing, reviewing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. I would say it is different for every project. But I think as a whole, let's say you're filming for 4 to 6 weeks. I would say your prep is going to be the same amount of that, if not even a little bit more. Usually for the features that I work on, I'm 4 to really 6 weeks of prep before filming.
And that's on and location prep or?
That's on location prep.
Okay. Wow. So that's not even like script and scene prep. That even
happens. When I get involved, the script is, hopefully the script is to a point where it's mostly done. I mean, there's always rewrites and little things that are changing, but hopefully we're to the point where it's locked and, you're able to sort of put some tent stakes in and start to build. That's not always the case, but we try. But you know, it's scouting locations with the director, and sort of determining the DP and sort of determining what and the production designer, what locations are going to work and what aren't. And so a lot of that is going on initially, and then once you decide, then there is work that can be done. Sometimes there's set modifications or location modifications that are happening to real locations. There's, you know, the DP might be planning out shots, and he might go in with the director and just talk through some blocking of certain key scenes. And I mean, there's just a lot that can that goes on all the while, you know, casting is taking place and hiring of department heads and all of their staff downline is happening during prep. And, you know, there are some that are only working when on day one of filming, but there's a lot of the team that starts well before that. I'm one of the first ones that typically land on location. You know, there's usually the unit production manager kind of sets up the office and the business side of it. The costume designer, the production designer, a lot of times they're on before me. The director of photography sometimes, and then myself. And then you also have a location manager who's starting to scout locations or put some of that together if it's a location-based.
Obviously, every film is different, but
yeah,
if you were to take a guess on the average number of people who are working on many of the recent films you've been a part of, I mean, where do you put that number? Several hundred?
The projects that I typically work on, yes, probably 150 to 200 on set at any given time. Sometimes more on bigger days when there's more going on. And you have what's called day players, which are just coming on to support, you know, could be a large crowd scene. So you just need more people to help manage
extras and stuff
the extras. It could be a big scene with picture cars. So you've got a lot of drivers and vehicles that are being brought in and placed and things like that.
That's amazing. So collaboration is actually like a core value of us at Salt. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things we believe are so critical to the role of creative process. I mean, you're working with so many people. You said earlier that like you're basically managing a lot of the crew, department leads and all that sort of stuff. What do you think, Jason's one of the biggest lessons you've learned in facilitating great teams or facilitating collaboration in the creative process?
Yeah, I think number one is identifying the best for what you can afford in terms of experience, attitude, skill sets. That's a big part of it. You know, you start with your department heads and finding those that really understand the story. And, you know, in the faith-based arena, it's you want people that that understand what you're doing, understand the story. That, you know, not everyone on a faith movie is a believer. It's not a prerequisite. But you want people that understand the heart behind it and can really grasp hold of that. And there's a core that you definitely want to have the same belief system, because, you know, it can be hard. It's challenging.
And it's probably going to come across in the conversations and in the directing.
100%, 100%. So attitude is for me, I'll choose attitude over skill any day. But, we talked about in the beginning about how have we gotten better at what we do. You've got to have the skill set. It can't just be great hearted people. Although that's key. It's key. You still need to have experience and skills and an understanding of what it is that you're there to do. Because with good department heads, then they're hiring good people that they can work with and lean on, depend on. So you get better participation that way. And so it just works all the way down. But you also have to lead with a good attitude. You know, as a department head, you can either make or break your department. You can either be a positive influence and encouragement, or you can tear down and create a toxic atmosphere. And I think it's important that we're all, even in the hard times, finding the good. And sometimes it means just pulling everybody together and saying, hey, this is a curveball we weren't expecting, or these are things that have happened, but let's rally together. Let's figure out a way to dig ourselves out of the situation that we're in, or whatever it might be, so that we can at the end have the best product to deliver to the audience that we're wanting to reach.
It's awesome. It really is amazing, the picture of making a film and how it really does sort of embody the idea that as the body of Christ, we get to work together to sort of display the creativity of our God.
I think it's important to, when you talk about budget, I don't care if it's a $200,000 budget or a $2 million budget or a $200 million budget, you're never going to have enough money to do what it is that you want to do. Because
Jason, can you say that one more time? Cause someone just missed that and I don't want them to have to rewind.
Yeah, I can. Cause it's important. It doesn't matter if it's a $2,000 budget, a $200,000 budget, a $2 million or a $200 million budget, you'll never have enough money to do what it is that you want to do. And the reason is because we're always, as creatives, we're always just reaching for the most that we can get. And we, there's always a limitation on resource, even though our minds and hearts are limitless, that there's time and money that are two major resources that we don't have abundance of. And so it's about being diligent, responsible with what you do have. And a lot of that is preparation. Preparation on a film is key. Because you can either not be prepared when you get out there, as soon as there's a problem that arises or a challenge or a conflict, all of your energy goes into solving that and the wheel keeps turning and we keep moving and you're just not able to address the things that come up. But if you're prepared, and so you've got everything as thought through and buttoned up and communicated as you can, then if there's a curveball that comes, you've got the bandwidth because everything's not a curveball. Yeah. And I think sometimes when there's not proper preparation, everything seems to be that curveball. And so it becomes frustrating and just drains your energy and you can't tackle the issues because everything's an issue. Versus if you just took the time to pour in and do the work in prep, then so much of it is taken care of when you get out in the field and you just have these little things that come up, you can address them because you've got your hands free to do so.
That's awesome. Well, I want to put you on the spot in the time that we have left, Jason.
Yeah.
Someone listening to this has got to be asking this question. So I'm going to ask it on their behalf. Quickly, what advice do you give someone who has an idea that they want to pitch to, let's say, the Irwins, who I know you just worked on Jesus Revolution and the Fords, the Kendrick Brother film that just came out? How do they pitch their idea to a major studio?
Yeah, look, a lot of times it's timing and connections, and it's just finding the ability to connect with the right person. Those guys that are at the top of their game, they're getting submissions all the time. And everyone thinks they have the best idea, the best story. And it may be true, but finding it through the weeds of all the different ideas that are out there can be tough. So it's patience. It's trust that number one, God is your resource. It's not the producer that gives you a minute, but it's God. And so whether it's a yes or a no, you always have to keep your eye on him. That's most important. I always say, as a freelance crew person, my provision is not the next producer that calls me up and says, hey, I've got a film. I want you to come work on it. It's God. And if the minute I start thinking, man, where's that? I don't have nothing going on. Then I wind up in a place that I don't want to be. But if I keep my eyes fixed on him, he's going to provide the opportunities that he wants me involved in. So if you've got a good story, just keep working it and look for opportunities. I mean, there's a lot of film festivals and things that take script submissions. There's ways to get there, but it's not easy, and it's not just a phone call away where you can call up Kingdom Story Company or Wonder or one of these guys that are top of their game and say, "Hey, I want you to make my next. I want your movie to be my story, my script." It just doesn't work that way.
Jason, I wish we had another hour because we could dive into this filmmaking process and learn so much for our community. Thank you for your time. Thank you for kind of pulling back the curtain, literally, and kind of helping us understand kind of the role of creativity and teamwork, collaboration, and even just at large, sort of the filmmaking process. How can someone connect with you? Are you on socials anyway?
Yeah, I am. My Instagram is at jdogmac, JAYDOGMAC. I'm on Facebook. Email me, call me, my phone number's out there. So,
I love it.
You know, it's funny. I'm mentoring a couple of people I've never met, that are in, getting started in filmmaking. They found me on, Instagram and just messaged me and, just started asking questions. We've ended up, you know, having conversations over time, and, cool. I love to pour into people and just, you know, answer questions specific to what they're doing, what they're about. So,
well, we'll make sure to put all that in the show notes. And Jason, thanks for your time, man. Thanks for pouring into this community. Thank you,
Luke. Yeah, appreciate it.
All right. All right. I hope that fed you well. I hope that you've got some insights on how to bring back to your church a way to create more efficiencies in your creative process. Maybe think about your role in a little bit different way, which I think is definitely what Jason brought to the table there. So glad he was there. Thank you for tuning into the podcast. Make sure that you go to the show notes. You can get all the details of all the things we mentioned, the Salt News, the What's in Your Card, all the things. You can also get plugged into the Salt community a little bit more. Make sure that you subscribe, you share this with a friend, and you drop us a 5-star rating. This helps immensely as we continue to expand our community and find new voices. Without further ado, we'll see you guys next week. Have a great day.